Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Max Carlin. Max, how's it going this morning?
I'm doing all right, Ben. How are you?
I am doing well. And we are joined, as usual, by PD Webb to chat today. So PD, how's it going?
It is going very good on this very busy week.
The wait is finally over. A triple header of fun is upon us this week. Football's in full effect, with many teams strutting their stuff, and the MLB playoffs are in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantages of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
It is a very busy week. Excited to take a little break this week to chat about what we're going to talk about today. So today, we have a variety of topics with PD. We're going to talk about his now famed heuristic. You should go read all of the pieces he's done on that relating to guards in this 2020 draft. They're fantastic. And then we're going to spend some much-needed time on 2021, given that the college basketball season is now rapidly approaching.
Cade practiced yesterday.
He made a really good pass.
We're just desperate for anything that's not 2020 draft at this point. I understand.
But yes, much-needed 2021 talk today after – even though, you know, with college basketball and the draft being so close together, we're going to do a little of both. So let's just get into our episode today.
Sure. So, PD, I guess, do you want to get into the basics of what the heuristic is and what you're attempting to give people an outline for evaluating with the heuristic?
So, I don't really like evaluating guards for the most part. I don't find it to be particularly like a stimulating scouting process when doing long form research. And I recognize that a lot of people who are NBA fans or like, you know, partial draft heads don't necessarily have the time to watch 30 games of somebody. And so for the heuristic, it was a way of trying to institutionalize how I grade guards pretty quickly. Using both their highlight tape and then a small amount of stats and then some additional context with games. And it's a way of, you know, quickly understanding what a guard is, what a guard isn't, and then the context they can pretty easily slide into in the NBA.
Yeah, so I think that the concept of highlight scouting is very interesting because it's obviously not something that should comprise all of your scouting work, but there's value to be drawn from looking at high points and seeing what those are for prospects, because it can be very revealing if the high points kind of don't meet the qualifications that you lay out as important to reach. So I guess the first prong of your heuristic is easy buckets in the half court. So I guess before we get into that a little bit, you want to just give a like quick explanation of what you mean by easy buckets?
Yeah. The best way to tell if somebody is a prospect or not is to see if they belong on the court. Like, if your first impression of someone playing basketball is like, they need to get these other children out of here. Like, when you watch John Wall's mixtape, you're like, this is child abuse. I don't know who allowed this, but like, it can't happen. So easy buckets are the ones that's like, you know, it is whatever the level of competition is, it should look easy. It should be, you know, one move and go. If it requires 4, 5, 6, 7 moves to get by anybody at the level they're currently at, like, you should be concerned. And every counter, every reaction the defense has, there should be a counter. So just the effort level required to get very good looks is the first thing that should jump out about a guard.
And I think that's, you know, kind of an easy thing that you can glean from the highlight scouting is, you know, yes, everyone looks good making shots in a highlight reel, but there's a difference between, you know, a guard who, you know, is a difficult shot maker in those highlight reels, and which is, you know, hard to know whether that's a real thing just from highlights, but it's easy to know whether, you know, burst or explosion or the ability to get, you know, wide open layups and wide open dunks is real from watching them do it in highlights. If they do it in highlights, you know, they can do it. So yeah, I mean, that's just like an easy thing. That's probably the most important thing for me and that I've learned from the heuristic is like to look for in the highlights.
Have you found that there are any notable examples of guys who were able to get good looks very easily who washed out badly in the league?
Yeah, I mean, you'll find guys who can get really easy looks, but it's often because the type of guy that gives them trouble or the type of coverage that gives them trouble isn't present at their current competition level. Like, obviously, if you're playing at, you know, a small public school in Hawaii, like, that's a different competition level than, you know, if you're playing Damien Classic in LA. Like, that's just a different translation. Often you'll find guys who, like, straight up can't shoot. So, you know, your Drake Balls, Briscoes, guys who can get whatever they want to at a level, but it's because the defense isn't capable of coordinating to the point to force them to take shots they don't want to take. So there's holes in this, but that kind of goes to the some of the later points that, like, this is still a box that has to be checked and has to be checked, like, as quickly as possible.
To cover for that hole, though, when you're doing highlight scouting, do you look at multiple competition levels, multiple contexts?
Yeah, I mean, competition level jumps out pretty quickly. You generally look at centers.
Yeah.
It's just like, is this a college center right now? Yes, no. And that's kind of the easiest way to tell. The other one is like the organization level. You know, is it beats one guy or is there, you know, multiple people on help side? So I think that you don't necessarily need to have a calculation for the competition, but just understanding what is or is not present and factoring that into your, you know, small sample analysis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started watching a Jalen Johnson game the other day. I think there's like one Nicolette high school game on YouTube and I started watching it and everyone is like 5'9" except for Jalen Johnson. Right. And just like, there's not a lot to be taken from this.
Unless he's shooting and then everything can be taken.
Yeah, no, that's true. So I guess this year, who would you say are the standouts in getting easy buckets and satisfying this element of the heuristic?
I mean, Kyra is somebody that jumps out to me. They aren't all there. Sometimes they're in semi-transition, but just like when he gets easy buckets, they are incredibly easy. And it is in a way that is very translatable. It's not an issue of like, is he seeing the wrong types of coverage? Is he not seeing NBA athletes? Like, doing it at a age disadvantage in the SEC while being the focus of your team is like kind of a kitchen sink situation. And so he's seeing things that are extremely real and translate. And like the finishes jump off the page. I think on the other side is like Maxi. Like, Maxi doesn't have a lot that's easy. And you could determine where you think that comes from. I mean, I've seen Maxi like get stuff easy, and the easy stuff that he gets is usually finishing through people, which has its own value. So I think that you can quickly determine context even from a 12-minute highlight tape.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of the concern with this class, is that there are not necessarily guards who can get easy buckets. Like, even with Kyra, like you said, I think a lot of it is going to be semi-transition stuff. And that's kind of why this class isn't that great, because there is not a guard who, like even
as Riller.
That's the point.
I mean, I was thinking, like, Riller is really the only one to me that, like, you know, looks consistent in translation. But then there's obviously, you know, other issues with Riller, you know, beyond his ability to get easy buckets. But the easy buckets are definitely there for Riller. I think they're going to be.
I mean, yeah, I think that there's questions about usage with Riller.
I think it's fair.
And I think why he didn't jump mining and Kyra did is that, like, there are some times where he's, like, you know, running off Iverson cuts and catching and facing while the defense loads up. And I just don't necessarily see that being his NBA role.
Riller does play off ball, I think, more than he kind of gets a rep for. I mean,
and I mean, there's the competition level caveat with him, where, like, you know, Kyra's not running into these guys who you look at the opposing team and you're like, okay, this is really not going to tell me that much. That doesn't happen in the SEC. It does in the CAA.
I mean, he's able to do the same things against, like,
teams
like Oklahoma State and, like, VCU, which are, you know, very legitimate competition. But yeah, I mean, generally, I think that's a strong point. Especially when there are games, like, in the CAA when he does struggle, because, like, there are times when he, like, gets walled off when he probably shouldn't. So yeah, but yeah, I mean, the easy buckets, like, at some level they're going to be there for him.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of buckets that he does not have to work hard for. Like, there are a lot of buckets where he is just, like, exploding by a guy with one step and he's in the dust. But it translated against Oklahoma State and VCU. But I just think that, like, generally speaking, if you're watching Riller highlights in most of his games,
it'll be CAA.
You will see some situations where it's like, okay, this is not necessarily representative competition. So the next prong of the heuristic that is pretty similar,
related. It's opposite side of this coin.
Yeah, it's what is the degree of difficulty in the average bucket? And this one I think is very interesting to me, because I feel like the most highly regarded highlight tapes are like, yeah, they're going to be Smalls dunking on people. But after that, it's probably hitting, like, ridiculous step backs and doing Kobe stuff. And in reality, like, those are not high percentage shots. And if, like, it's really, really good to be a tough shot maker. That's like a skill set that's worth a ton.
That's a rare skill set to find.
Well, it's not even that. It's just, like, even if you're the best tough shot maker of all time, that should be, like, the hardest 10% of your baskets, not 100% of your baskets. PD, do you think that this is the area where people kind of fail most when generally doing highlight scouting, that they get tantalized by these things that look impressive, but actually, like, if this is what you're relying on to score, it's not good?
Yeah, I think that they don't factor the translation area as much. So there's two problems here. The first one is, if you're taking a volume of tough shots, that's not something that translates to a higher level. You have to assume that the amount of difficult shots you're going to take in the league goes up as defenders and defenses get better. And the other one is that you have to ask how this very good prospect is getting pushed to take tough shots by an NCAA defense. And that's the one that I think people get hung up on most. It's like, yeah, he took he made a great two pivot fadeaway over two defenders. The problem is that, like, it happened versus, like, William and Mary. How is that happening? What is that going to look like if that's the Los Angeles Lakers? And you, in that idea, reach this problem of process, and that's what a lot of bad shot or tough shot making, two sides of the same coin, is it's a reflection of generally difficult process, and you want to have the simplest process possible for an outstanding prospect.
Yeah, I feel like it's even more apparent with, like, high school mixtapes, because I think a lot of these guys that have a lot of buzz, in the mainstream, or even like, I mean, increasingly like on Instagram and stuff like that, not, you know, in scouting circles. But of these guys who then like develop large followings and are just kind of well-known independent of like a prospect standpoint. That's the problem with a lot of them, is that this stuff looks really impressive, but when your entire highlight tape is like contested jumpers, like impressive step backs, but yeah, like that's all you can get are step back long twos. That's a really big problem. Like, it's cool that you can kind of make them, but one, you're going to like, they won't be there as much at the next level. And two, you're not going to make them at a high enough rate. So I guess I feel like this year there are a lot of relevant examples of guards where their average degree of difficulty is really high, like Cole Anthony. Yeah, Cole is like, I think, the main one who comes to mind. Are there any guys that you'd say stand out in a positive regard this year, PD, with they can just get themselves good looks over and over and over?
Cassius and Flynn are the two guys that like don't take as much difficult shots as they could. It's probably the best way to phrase it. They still take tough shots, but there's a lesser volume of it than what you would think for an undersized guard who don't necessarily have a ton of explosion.
Yeah, honestly, like Flynn, since he doesn't get to the rim that often for like what wind up being pretty good looks, and because he really, really likes to lean on his floater, I honestly, like, his degree of difficulty is kind of high. Now, he is willing to just sort of launch from three from anywhere. And Cassius like has the quick pop ability and gets up a ton of threes. Now, like, the problem with Cassius is he never gets to the rim, and when he does get there, they're not even good looks for him because he's so incapable of finishing. But yeah, I mean, even those guys, like, I think the average degree of difficulty is kind of worryingly high. Yeah.
And I mean, you always have guys, you know, like Ant, who will occasionally flash the very low degree of difficulty shots, but, you know, too often are stuck taking difficult, you know, shots that look impressive. You know, the Michigan State stuff is, Michigan State second half looks impressive, but it would be a lot, you know, it would be a lot even more impressive if those were open layups and dunks rather than, you know, 35 footers with defenders in their face, because it's a lot less sustainable and a lot less efficient in the long term.
It would also be great if the first half tape wasn't what the first half tape wasn't.
That's true.
But, like, the problem with bad process is that, like, it replicates itself. So if you have a game where, you know, you hit a double step back three times in a row, like, that's probably not going to happen next time. That's not probably not going to happen the next game you do it. And I think somebody that really stuck out for me with this was Nico Mannion, who just, like, couldn't, like, his average, he didn't take a ton of, like, absolutely ludicrous shots in terms of difficulty, but his average shot just wasn't simple enough for me, for somebody who was theorized to be a shot creator. I just never felt like he got, like, even like a shot that was 10% easier than it had to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in all elements of the heuristic, as we'll see, Nico doesn't look great, but I there's something I want to bring up when it comes to that a bit later. But one guy I do want to talk about now, while we're still focused on the first two aspects of the heuristic, is LaMelo Ball, because we'll see in the following three prongs, he's going to look great. But the first two, I think that this is like the major concern with LaMelo, that these are kind of the, like, can you be trusted to self-create prongs of the process. And I don't know how you guys feel about it. I think you're maybe a little bit higher on LaMelo than I am, but I would not feel good about him satisfying either of these. Like, I think his average degree of difficulty is pretty damn high. And I think he has to work really hard to get his looks. Like, this is the guy everyone's seen that, like, 12 crossovers on the NBL big failing to break him down play. Like, LaMelo has to work hard for his advantages. And that's kind of concerning.
With LaMelo, not having transition really hurts, because that's where his mind can work at the highest level. I mean, in general, guys who aren't nuts explosive or don't have like some easy physical advantage, and LaMelo's is especially difficult because he was playing in a professional league, like, the first two are going to look worse
that's just a reality of being that particular style of guard. I don't think that you need to ace all of these. There are guards who still have, you know, context issues or, you know, fit in an NBA team circumstance. I think that Melo can create easy looks. The other issue is that, like, he doesn't always want to. Like, he is fine taking shots that I think most people in this class would not be okay taking consistently. And so there is a selection element of, you know, he's not just being forced into these shots. At times he feels like he revels in bad shots.
Yeah, which I think you could say the same for Ant. But I think that there is definitely a level of inability with LaMelo that is concerning. Should we move on to the next box in the heuristic?
Yeah.
Okay, so next we've got how dramatic is the advantage or space creation. And this is something that I think is very relevant to guys that we've discussed in the last couple of weeks in depth, like Jarrett Culver, Killian Hayes, for sure. So, PD, who comes to mind this year for you as guys who maybe are viewed as advantage creators, but the margins are really slim, or the opposite, where they're really just kind of breaking an entire defense down, and it's like really, really dramatic?
Yeah, so I think that with advantage creation, once a guard can beat their guy, I'd like to focus on how many defenders exactly like have to take attention. Like every time Lillard dribbles, you just see four dudes like who, you know, are hearing every huddle and hearing every scouting report being like, Lillard can't beat us. And you see four guys just sprint to the ball. So I think this is the area, rather than easy buckets, that he does best, where it's just like, you consistently see, whether it's a low major, mid major, high major, like guys are sprinting for their lives anytime that he gets any kind of advantage. When you're considering like the passing angles too, I really liked Cassius, just because like he starts to get ahead of the count on defenses, and defenses just throw everything they can to catch up. In terms of poorly, Tyrell Terry has some real issues here. Because teams can, if they are capable of recovering to him as a re-spot up threat, he loves to, you know, pump fake, take one dribble and reshoot. Teams can just kind of stunt at him or feel confident that he can't finish through a wall. And there's not a like definite recourse that he has to retain that advantage because of his lack of physicality.
This is also a major Maledon issue as well. He's like the main one I think of for this one. It's just somebody who is never like his shots, his self-created shots are always difficult. They're always tough. And I mean, he like some of the footwork stuff at the rim and the craft is really good. The touch is good, but it's always tough. It's always difficult. And yes, the competition he's playing is very good. And he's, you know, 18 playing in the EuroLeague, but still, you know, it's not something that you see improving really at the NBA level, which is definitely concerning.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of these things are about margins, and these guys who play with very slim margins at lower levels, like once they move up a level, the margins are going to get even slimmer. And if you're starting at, you know, a slim point, you're eventually going to run out of margin. And yeah, I think Maledon is a guy who plays with really slim margins that like, yeah, he's gonna get you to go over a screen, and then he's gonna get you on his hip, and like he's gonna work with that, and he'll use his touch. But like, I mean, I think this shows up especially with the passing with him, that he has an unwillingness to use live dribble passing that he has, like he'll discontinue his dribble and then he wants to pivot around, and like those passing windows are kind of there in the French League and in EuroLeague, but they're going to close in the NBA. Like the speed and length and recovery ability of NBA athletes is insane. And so when you're already playing a very marginal game, like it's just going to get so much tougher at a higher level.
Yep.
One guy who I think is going to kill this, how dramatic is the advantage space creation in college is Cade. And like he kills everything because, you know, he's a god.
He's Cade.
But like the way that he is able to manipulates so many different defenders in so many different ways with his pacing and his eyes and his, you know, and shot fakes, and just like the fact that he's enormous and can always get a shot off or finish through people. Like, and then his tendencies of being a guy who I think is kind of fundamentally pass first, and just like wants to get other people involved and make the right play. I think that he's just going to like totally kind of wreak havoc on every defense, and they're going to be terrified of him. And he's just going to be I think he's going to have a pretty ridiculous passing season, and hopefully he becomes more selfish at some point, but I think he's really going
to, I mean, has shown that willingness to, you know, to dominate those first couple of points, the heuristic. I mean, the Phenom game always sticks out. Where he had like 13 rim attempts and they were all like open layups or dunks.
Yeah, and against
a loaded EYBL team. I mean that's easy buckets. That's low degree of difficulty, and that's something that Cade I think is going to be able to do. And I think he will. We have to see against, you know, Big 12 and NCAA competition, but I think, you know, I think Cade has shown, you know, at the highest levels of high school basketball that he's willing to do that when he needs to, and I think he will. I mean,
when evaluating guard prospects, the ability to make defenses think while rotating is so important. If defenses can flow, and this is sort of the point against Cole that I wound up, is that defenses could just flow at his secondary read, and he wouldn't freeze that defender. They could just, you know, rotate and understand, like, well, he's either going to do this or that. Or Cade isolates defenders and be like, what are you going to do? Are you going to rotate to the corner? Are you going to sag down on this big? Or are you going to get to the midpoint so you can get between the corner and the slot? And that defender is now thinking, and then he goes to the next defender, and he's reading multiple defenders at the same time, forcing them to read him. And so they can flow down to his decisions. So I think that it's one thing if you can create with your handle or your shooting, you know, a huge amount of space, but it's another thing to freeze those defenders in that space so that they can't recover back to being in rotation. Keeping defenders one step behind at all times, or continually throwing them new problems that they have to think their way through, is the essential function, regardless of how much space creation you have initially with your first step.
Yeah, I mean, it's Cade or any of those guys being the ones who dictate the rotations, rather than the rotations being the factor that dictates, you know, a player's decision making. I mean,
yeah, and this prong is why all three of us, I think, have Killian and LaMelo as the top two prospects in this class. Like they are guys who will pick out one defender and make his life hell, and the result will be either a wide open three or an open layup or a dunk. Like these guys know how to manipulate defenses to create complete breakdowns. And honestly, I think, like, I mean, Halliburton kind of does too, but the problem is going to be the creation of an initial advantage there. At all.
Oh, I think that it's keeping people in rotation, because, like,
yeah,
Halliburton has the opposite read of Cole, where it's like, oh, I know where he's going to go. He's going to throw the ball. So, like, what teams will do when, you know, if Halliburton is able to, you know, dribble past people and create a rotation, is they will just sink as far back as possible into their help side splits.
Yeah,
and force him to the ball. They're like, okay, now go high point.
Yeah,
yeah. No, and I mean, I think you saw that with good college defenses that, yeah,
Baylor did it.
Yeah,
Baylor's one of the really sticks out, where they just like played the pass.
Yeah, and they forced them to. Yeah, and if you play it well and played space well, like, you are not going to give Halliburton options, and he's probably going to turn it over or take 15 floaters and not make them.
Yeah, which is what obviously a win for the defense and makes it tough for Halliburton, but.
And that's if he ever dribbles by anyone, which he won't.
That's a big if.
Listen up, fellas, because today we have a new Manscaped product alert. Manscaped just released the Weed Whacker Nose and Ear Hair Trimmer. Take a look in the mirror, and I guarantee you'll see hair sticking out of those holes. It's time to keep your ear and nose hair looking as nice as your clean-shaven pubes. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Weed Whacker. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. The premium Manscaped Weed Whacker uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. Its intelligently contoured design enhances the trimming experience, and it's waterproof, which makes for easy operation and cleaning. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use the code armchair. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds.
Should we move on to look closely at the passing windows, which I think can is probably the most difficult of these to see in a highlight tape, because it's probably going to require you to do some pausing and rewinding, whereas the others are, I think, fairly obvious. So PD, what is the utility to you of looking at the passing windows, and what specifically do you mean by that?
So, what I mean by passing windows are that in the circumstance where, imagine that the defense was in the same position, but all the defenders were better, how many options does the guard have? So, a lot of times at especially at lower levels, if you're scouting, high school or circuit games, like, a good player doesn't really have to go to their second or third options that often. They'll get to what they want and get it off. But as you get to the NBA, you need to have multiple options. So if you're in that circumstance, are there passing angles for you? Are you capable of seeing them? Or is the guard reading them? I mean, we're not in the old days where we have to see things in 360p anymore. So we can read the guard's eyes and understand, okay, he sees this slot. He's looking that defender off, and he just went finished. So for me, this is both a proxy for passing ability and for creation feel, for internalization of rotations and understanding of the spatial dynamics of like where those defenders are. Because like at some levels you can get away with like, you know, throwing hook passes high, but in the NBA they have to be on a laser. So
yeah,
for me, it's just, it's trying to see what this guard really understands. Cause usually this happens to guys who are blurs, but they like don't get help side rotations because they've never had to really read them before. And they'll get to a certain level where like, yeah, I've never seen a person do that because that guy's usually like, you know, so far behind. So it's just using this as a proxy of how much of the game they're reading, what they're reading. And, you know, as you watch more of a guy, you understand like what his comfort level is and where he likes to see things. And so it's a way of seeing what their own creation passing wiring is. So some guys like to shoot, you know, 40% on this one decision. Some like to pass 80% on this one decision. And so figuring out where their wiring lies in terms of how much they think they should pass or score. And then you can use that as a proxy for comfort level with, you know, their role at the next level, or, you know, how best to deploy them as a second side guy versus a first side guy. So this isn't really for its own utility, but as a way of understanding other things and informing those decisions.
So I guess maybe it's disqualified by that last thing you said, but are there guys who stand out positively or negatively on this aspect of the heuristic to you this year?
I think Riller stands out positively. He's a person who had to score more than I think he's probably like would like to.
Do you think that's always been the case, or is that more of a development this year?
I think that's a little more of a development this year. Obviously being a senior and just being like, okay, so I have to score X many points tonight for us to have a shot in this. The other guy that really stood out to me was Trey Jones, because I thought that Trey was making like reads and that like the defenders just weren't in the right place. Like I continually found Trey like sort of somewhat bemoaning the circumstances he was in, where he's like, well, this defender should be a step over, but they don't think that, you know, my wing can shoot, so he's not there. And it's sort of this, you know, what would happen in a game with proper gravity versus in a Duke game. And so over and over, I was like, oh, I see what he's trying to do, but that's not a reality. So now he has to sort of make an on-the-fly decision for what he thinks should happen in this circumstance. I think that's an element of Trey Jones that, like, we use the context argument selectively for the guys that we like, and we don't use it for the guys that we don't. It's just sort of the nature of being a person. And Trey Jones was in an awful situation last year. And I over and over, I kept looking at his passing windows and being like, yeah, that's there. Like, it doesn't matter if you throw it, because, you know, you're throwing it to a guy who either won't shoot or
isn't a particularly good decision maker for an advantage situation. So watching him read through these passing areas was interesting. Do you guys have guys that you feel stood out particularly negatively?
Negatively. Not really. I mean, positively thinking back, I think that this is somewhere where like Ja Morant looks very good. And I think in a similar vein to Trey, that like, you know, sometimes it was, there were things that I think like he clearly saw should have been there, but weren't necessarily, given the surrounding talent. And you know, I think that his sort of thought process speaks to the level of passer that he is. I don't know. I mean, do you have any guys that are notably negative in this department to you, PD?
I really didn't love a lot of Maxie's like in the moment decisions. Mm-hmm. It probably knocked me off my like preseason stance of like Maxie can be a semi-primary. Just because I don't think that the way that his gravity affected a defense was much different than it had previously. Mm-hmm. And without that gravity, I don't think that he has the threshold of passing. That isn't to say that he like isn't going to be a fantastic secondary. It's just that there is a delta between where he needs to be as a passer with his current gravity and where he is right now. And then like Cole and Terry didn't really I think they're both play finishers. I had always thought that about Cole, and Terry just never. The decision-making process for me is not one that I find to be particularly consistent or like highly valuable for his size.
Yeah, I mean, looking over it now, I think one guy who does kind of come to mind is Devon Dotson.
Yeah,
a little bit that like, yeah, I don't really know that he's got like an advanced decision-making process there. And also like he's not going to have the release valve of the lob threat that he had in college. Like probably he's likely to not have that level of release valve in the NBA because Udoka Azubuike is a really, really good lob threat. So yeah, I think that he's someone who comes to mind in this area.
So this is one that I go back to a lot with Markel, because like Markel was a really interesting passer. And I think that like, I thought that he thought the game at a really high level when he was at Washington. And I really like it when my guards throw ambitious turnovers through passing windows, both because it's like, it's a sounding out of a logic statement of like, okay, so what exactly can I get here? So like, I thought that Markel had the right type of turnovers, especially live ball turnovers at a pick and roll. But I think that if I went back and watched it again, I would probably be a little bit lower and confuse that ambition for understanding, just based on what we've seen with his NBA tape at this point. And also that like the Washington situation really wasn't good. And it probably got hype. There was probably a level of buff from the context that is a small factor, a smaller factor than we would like to admit.
And so the final arm of the heuristic, I think, is probably the easiest to see. It's just show me the special. I think that's pretty evident. You know, it's the sort of plays that make you say, wow, that you have to watch three or four or five times, not to understand what's going on, but just because they're incredible. I do you think that this year is that kind of, I mean, who are the real stars of that team? I feel like it's the obvious guys. It's going to be the guys at the top. So LaMelo, Killian, I think there will definitely be some Riller in there. Are there any other guys maybe who fly under the radar more that you think fit that? Or I mean, do you disagree with any of the guys that I named?
No, I think that the guys that you named are definitely good choices. I think there's another element of show me the special that I may not have emphasized enough, is that it's a relative decision. So like special is like, what can this guy do that you, if you were in a draft room and you had to say like, we need an off the dribble guy, like this guy is off the dribble special relative to his peers. So I think that in another way of phrasing this is like, what is it that this guy can do that nobody else can? And for me, like addition to the guys that you named, like Tyrell Terry deciding to shoot through like the smallest windows imaginable is something that I'm like, okay, I really enjoy that for what's likely going to be a guy who needs to shoot through really tiny windows. And I'm not certain if that's something that other people can do while with his usage profile. I think Cole's shooting versatility is truly special. That's like the one thing I've never even a little bit doubted about Cole is that he's going to be an electric shooter goal in pretty consistent versatility. I don't know if you can run him off like a ton of actions just because of the way that he gathers is a little delayed, but like he's certainly going to be able to shoot off the dribble and he's going to be able to catch and shoot from, you know, very deep. Riller's, you know, creation is nuts and is a thing that, you know, in recruiting, there's this idea that you put your first play first, and you can tell how good somebody is in a recruiting tape that you send to a coach based on how good the second play is. Like everybody, you know, who's a Division One guy has like one nuts thing that they've done, you know, whether it's going for a putback or, you know, a game winner. But then if the second one is like they make a layup in transition, you're like, oh, he's not a guy. Where Riller has like his creation highlights, he's like, no, there's like 10 of every type of creation you could possibly have. All of that is so real and it's so different than pretty much everybody else in this class that it really stands out. And then like Cassius is an all-time shooter. You know, if Izzo let him like go full Trae Young, we would probably get the exact extent of how much, but like looking at his numbers and looking at the tape, there's just no way that you walk away and be like, oh, this guy isn't going to be a top 10 shooter. You should probably on low volume in the NBA at some point during his career?
I think that he could struggle to get his shot off to some degree just because of his size. But yeah, I mean, he like watching Cassius in college, for sure, it's you can't come away with any conclusion other than this guy is a special college shooter. I think that those guys are all strong examples. There was one other guy. Oh, I mean, like, even someone like Rokas Jokubaitis has like a weird level of extension finishes for like a small, like not wildly explosive guard. I guess he's not that small. But like, you know, there are random special skills out there that I that matter for creation that you can kind of show up in this area. So it's not necessarily doing Ja Morant posters like that. It's not the only way that you can be special. There are other ways to do it.
For me, when I wrote this category, I was just thinking of the way that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander moved in the paint. That was the thing that, like, it. If you had just compiled a tape of only the time that he was with a live dribble entered the paint, and then none of the shots, I would have probably taken him in the first round. It's like you're 6'6" and you move like that. Like that's an NBA player who's an interesting bet for creation. Full stop. Just on that particular skill. So the idea that like you could just make a reel of the thing that is truly special, and it would be an interesting prospect by itself.
Yeah, that's a really good call. I think I invoked this whenever we talked about Sharif Cooper, show me the special, that like, I think that he generally does very well in the heuristic, except maybe average degree of difficulty on shots. But yeah, like I think the special is very evident for a guy with like, who can blow by guys whenever he wants. I mean, you could just show how, like, so many different aspects of Sharif's game and it would look special. Like, you could just show his body control at the rim. You could just show his finishing. You could just show his handling. Like, there are so many different things that you could just show and someone would be like, oh my God, this guy is kind of a prodigy.
2021 has a lot of guards that like, are going to be interesting cases for this because there's a lot of like really unique special, but there may not be all of the connecting pieces. Like Curbelo is going to absolutely murder this.
Yeah.
And like there's like the hand quickness, there's the weird passes, there's the hang time while he's clearly thinking. Like there's so many little things that he's special at, but there's going to be, you know, some larger concerns on just basic stuff that, you know, in the same way that Sharif has basic stuff questions. So yeah. I'm excited to see how this transfers to 2021 and how, what changes I might have to make to downplay the, just show me the special aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why you've got to take the whole thing as a whole. Because I think there are guys who break down in certain areas, even if they do have the special. However, like you said, there's definitely some concern that there are guys out there, especially next year, who can kind of satisfy all of these, but kind of by breaking this down, you're missing the bigger picture things that matter. Do we have anything else that we want to say on the heuristic before we move into our segment on 2021?
I have a small note.
Yeah, go for it.
And it's on guys like Nico Mannion. So, like, I think that this exercise, like, hurts Nico Mannion and or guys that fit the profile of Nico Mannion as, like, lottery guys or, you know, guys in the first, you know, 20 picks. But it helps them as NBA players because they're more likely to get selected in a context dependent role where they're more likely to succeed. So like this defeats the idea of like Nico should have secondary value, but it really helps of like, you know what Nico Mannion is really good at? Relocation threes. So if you have a system that has relocation threes and you pick him at 20, you know, 5, 26, 27, you're going to get great value because he does the exact thing that you want him to. So I think that rather than seeing this as like a way of hurting guys who don't, you know, create with the ball in their hands or not, advantage monsters, it's, you know, filtering that noise out and finding the thing that will keep them in, you know, the club of 450 best basketball players in the world.
Yeah, it's like helping parse out, you know, what players are and what players aren't to, you know, find the context that suits them. And, you know, by doing this correctly, you can find out that, you know, players, if a player isn't worthy of being taken highly, take him lower and get him in a context where he can be valuable.
Yeah, this does remind me actually of the one thing that I mentioned earlier that I wanted to bring up was that, yeah, so this really is just a heuristic for evaluating guards as creator prospects. But with the, like, as more and more teams have these jumbo wings, like, initiating their offense, I feel like it's not necessarily the prism through which you have to evaluate guards, like the expectation that a guy who's 6'2" like Nico Mannion needs to be a big time creator, like, kind of falls flat if that guy gets to play off of Ben Simmons or Jason Tatum or like Luka Doncic. Like, then you're talking about a different skill set, and something like being really good at relocation threes matters a lot more. And not being able to like create dramatic advantages matters a lot less. So I do just think that, like, maybe with the way that the NBA is shifting, like, if every team has a BJ Boston and a Cade Cunningham, it becomes less important maybe to have, you know, someone who's creating advantages like Sharif Cooper, and maybe more important to have someone like Caleb Love, who's a really versatile shooter with a ton of length and size. Like, I just think that maybe we're approaching a point in the NBA at some point soon with like what wings are becoming, that the way you evaluate guards has to change.
I think that we're maybe 4 years away from that point. We still have, you know, 21, which we're about to talk about, and then 22, which is going to be, you know, a whole bunch of really interesting wings. Yeah. And this is sort of a thing that I talked about at the end of the Moses Moody piece. Is that, like, we're going to reach a saturation point of jumbo initiators, and then we have to really start, you know, reevaluating what we want out of guards. But I don't think it changes. It's just that with the possessions that guards have where they have to create, they're now operating at a natural advantage because it's probably as a secondary action. So it's not that these things become less important. It's just the context with which they're deployed becomes different. So it's not going to be like 1-4 flat. Or like super high pick and roll. It's okay. A pick and roll's already been run and you're catching it, you know, on a diagonal against a slightly tilted defense. Does that buff shooting and make shooting floors more important? Yes. I don't think it denatures the rest of it though. I think that we're going to have
you know, a little more of threshold hunting with our guards, and that you'll probably want bigger guards just because they'll need to finish a little bit more. But we are 5 or so years away from a world where, you know, every team has a jumbo creator.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the we might just be talking about raised thresholds, because I do think that there's always going to be a spot for Trae Young to be more or less Trae Young. Like, you know, maybe he won't have this degree of on-ball load, but like, you're going to still value what he does to the level that we currently value at it and value it at. And, you know, you will still be coveting these skills if they're good enough. It just, you know, you're just going to have to reach a kind of crazy threshold.
Yeah. The guys are just going to have to be good enough, and good enough is going to get better and better.
Yeah.
But prospects, you know, will get better and better to, you know, with the changing times and changing priorities as well. I mean,
yeah. I mean, they're just going to develop mentally. Like, they're going to be coming along differently, right? Like,
yeah,
you're going to have more guys who are 6'2" who grow up playing off of a guy who's bigger than that. Like, you're gonna have more and more of the Cade Cunninghams out there. Like, okay, maybe not Cade Cunningham, but like, you're gonna have
big creators.
Yeah, you're gonna have more 6'7" guys who are playing with the ball in their heads. I mean, you already have that.
Yeah, I mean, just that means more guards who learn how to do that, how to play off those guys at a young age, which is, you know, a whole different thing, because it's not how it is as much, you know, historically.
And then eventually everyone's going to be a Mobley and 7 feet tall and running pick and roll, and it's going to be crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Mobley? Well, I mean, in high school, they both did some ball handling, but I would say more Evan Mobley, ideally.
Boo.
All right. With that, should we cut this and then move on to 2021?
Let's cut it so I don't have to do this in post.
All right, cool.
All right. So yeah, thank you again for the PD for coming on and talking to us. If you haven't read his pieces on, well, you should have read his pieces on the heuristic before you listen to this. If you haven't, you definitely should now. So go read all of those that they're on his Patreon. Go throw some money at him, because he does this for us for free, and he should certainly be getting paid by somebody to write these things. Thank you all for listening again. You can follow us on Twitter at @prep2propod. Follow Max at @MaxACarlin. Follow me at @Ben_Pfeiffer_. No, follow Petey at @AboveTheBreak3. Can't forget about that. And with that, we'll see you all on Wednesday.